Well, hello everybody, and welcome to Reading with Rick. It's Monday night, and I look out the window, and it's still sunny, but the shadows are getting a little long. Pretty nice day today, as we are working our way through. We're almost done with what has seemed like a really long stretch of school, aren't we? Not too many more days left. It certainly has been a different time, hasn't it, for everybody? Well, tonight, what do we have in store for you on Reading with Rick? We've got a couple of stories for you here. Matter of fact, yesterday was Mother's Day, wasn't it? Did you do something nice for your mom? I hope so. Tonight, we've got a special Mother's Day book. It's the day after Mother's Day, but we don't do Reading with Rick on Sundays, so we'll do it tonight. This is called, I'm not sure how many moms would like this, but the name of this book is A Mud Pie for Mother. How about that? A Mud Pie for Mother. That's not a really long book, so we'll do another book as well called Snowmen at Night. Snowmen at Night and A Mud Pie for Mother. Then, for our second story tonight, we're going to start, you know how we did Bridge to Terabithia a while back? We kind of broke that down into nightly segments. We're going to try that again with another book. This is called Wrestling Sturbridge by Rich Wallace. It says, here's the deal. I'm stuck in Sturbridge, Pennsylvania, where civic pride revolves around the high school wrestling team, and the future is as bright as the inside of the cinder block factory where our dads work, and where their dads worked, and where I won't ever work. Not if I can help it. I'm the second best 135-pound wrestler in school, behind Al, the first best 135-pound wrestler in the state. But I want to be state champion as badly as he does, maybe even more. I just haven't figured out how to do it. I tell myself that I'll find a way. I think my whole life depends on it. So we'll start that book tonight and see how far we get with it. It's going to take a couple of nights at least to get through that book, but we'll start that a little bit later on tonight. But for now, let's start with our A Mud Pie for Mother by Scott Beck. Now, who would bring a mud pie? Who likes mud? Well, a little pig likes mud, and he is the one that's going to bring a mud pie for Mother. And he is walking and carrying a little basket. And it says, Little Pig needs something for Mother Pig's birthday. I will give this flower to Mother Pig, he thought. That flower is my favorite, buzzed the bee. Please don't take it. So, if it is your favorite, then I won't take it, said Little Pig. I will take this pretty yellow hay instead. And he reaches over to pick up some hay to put in the basket. Oh, no, mooed the cow. That hay is my bed. And the cow laid down on the hay. In that case, I will take these shiny seeds, grunted Little Pig as he squeezed under the fence and he went over into the field where the farmer had just planted some seeds. Cluck, cluck, I was going to eat those, squawked the hen, as she came with her wings all flapping and her little chicks by her side. Then I guess I'll just take some dirt and make a mud pie for Mother, Little Pig decided. And he walked over towards the house, towards the garden, and just as he started to get some dirt, that dirt is for my garden, said the farmer's wife. Little Pig put back the dirt. Now he had nothing for Mother Pig. But then the farmer's wife said, What a good little pig, and she gave him some bread. On his way home, the hen said, Thank you for letting me eat the seeds, and she gave him some eggs. Little Pig was so happy, he ran right past the cow. Wait, she mooed, I want to thank you for not taking the hay. And she gave Little Pig some milk. When Little Pig met the bee, I made honey from the flower, she buzzed. Please take some. It's very sweet. So Little Pig took the honey and the milk and the eggs and the bread, and he made a big, beautiful breakfast for Mother Pig's birthday. Do you know, that was just what she wanted. And she and Little Pig had their breakfast together. So a mud pie for Mother turned out to be a pretty nice breakfast in the end, didn't it? Just because Little Pig was nice and he didn't take all those things that he wanted to take originally. But on his way back, he found out that that was a good decision not to take those. So that's the story of a mud pie for Mother. Let's do another one, huh? How about snowmen at night? Snowmen at night. And we see on the cover of this book, during the day, the snowmen are just standing there in front of their houses in the winter, and their arms are up, and their scarves are on, and their mittens are on their tree branch hands, and their caps are on their heads, and they have a big smile of coal and two coal eyes, and each one has a carrot for a nose. But then we see at night, it looks like they come to life, and they are dancing in a line and having all kinds of fun. So let's see what Snowmen at Night is all about. One wintry day, I made a snowman, very round and tall. The next day when I saw him, he was not the same at all. His hat had slipped, his arms drooped down. He really looked a fright. It made me start to wonder, what do snowmen do at night? I think that snowmen start to slide when it gets really dark, off the lawn and down the street, right into the park. They gather in a circle while they wait for all the others, sipping cups of ice-cold cocoa made by snowman mothers. Then the snowman games begin. They line up in their places, each one anxious for his turn in the snowman races. Oh, look at them. They're all racing. I wonder how they race without legs, but they're doing it. After everyone has had a chance at racing once or twice, they go on over to the pond to do some skating tricks on ice. All those snowmen on the ice. Except for one snowman, he's laying down in the snowbank making a snow angel with his arms made out of tree branches. Sometimes they start giggling, and then they act like clowns. They bump into each other till they all fall down. They gather up their snowballs, the pitcher takes his aim, and underneath the moonlit sky, they play a baseball game. No one knows just how it started, but soon it's quite a sight, with snowmen throwing snowballs in the world's best snowball fight. Boy, they're having a snowball fight and sliding down a slide in the playground, chasing each other. There's one juggling with some snowballs, and they're playing hide and seek. Then it's time for sledding. It's a wild ride down the hill. Wahoo, they yell. This is by far the biggest snowman's biggest thrill. Finally, they're tuckered out and getting sleepy, so they slowly gather up their things, and one by one, they go. So if your snowman's grin is crooked or he's lost a little height, you'll know he's just been doing what snowmen do at night. Oh, that was a fun little story there about snowmen at night. You didn't know they did that at night when you're all tucked away and sleeping and dreaming in the winter, do you? So maybe your snowmen are out playing and having a fun time and they're back in their place in the morning when you get up. That's Snowmen at Night by Carolyn Buhner. Good story there. So when we come back, we'll take our break now and let the little ones head off to bed and get their good night's sleep in and get it started anyway. And then when we come back, we're going to start a story tonight called Wrestling Sturbridge by Rich Wallace. So we'll have that for you when we come back on Reading with Rick right after this. Thank you. Okay, we're back on Reading with Rick here on a Monday night, and it's a good night to start a new book. We won't make it all the way through the book tonight, but we'll see how far we get, and for about 40 minutes or so, we'll read until about 8:30 tonight. This story is about wrestling. Wrestling Sturbridge is the name of the book, and it's written by Rich Wallace, and our story starts in the month of November. She's somebody I could write a song about, I think. She's small and older, maybe 19, and has probably seen some things in those years. Her hair is so full and bouncy, and it's that color, a couple of colors, really, of dried hay, but with a warmth to it, too. You can tell that she's strong by the way she lifts the pump off the tank with one lean, flexed arm and flips that handle thing up and shakes her hair off her face. There's authority in the way she shoves it smoothly into the car and in the way she wears that mechanic shirt, gray with the tail hanging out of her jeans and a little mobile patch on the pocket. It's a better show than MTV. Al's playing with the radio, looking for the Spanish station out of Weston. He's in an international mood tonight, with practice starting tomorrow and the Olympics next summer. So we'll be driving English, probably on the wrong side of the road, like they do over there. I'm in the back seat, so I have a decent view of the gasoline girl. Al's only getting $3 worth, so she's stayed with the pump the whole time. Now she's pulling it out, a couple of drops spurting out of the nozzle, and the denim stretches tight on her thighs as she wrestles the thing back into its holster. She ambles over and holds her hand out to Alan. He slipped her the bills, and she mumbles, "Thanks." Hatcher looks back at Digit and smirks, and I don't know if they know something about this girl or what. Al pulls out kind of fast, and I look back, and she's already got the pump in another car, a van, actually, and she's reaching over to get one of those squeegee things out of a bucket. We didn't bother going to the football game. It's the last game, and we're all in our own world tonight and didn't want any distractions, and I've avoided public places since I beat up that minister. We hit the mats for real tomorrow morning, so Digit's mostly looking out the window at the town's dark stores, and Hatcher steadily squeezing the rubber ball to build up his forearms, as if they're not built up enough already. Al's the only one who's really saying anything, and he's just been going on about kicking people's butts and winning the state meet. He found the station, so now he's beating on the dashboard and singing words he doesn't understand. My right shoulder still hurts a little. The town is deserted, even more deserted than most nights, because everybody who'd be hanging out is at the game. In an hour, the usual spots will be filled, strategic storefronts and benches. In this car with me are my three best friends and the three biggest obstacles to my doing much wrestling this winter. I have weighed 135 pounds for two solid years now. After Thanksgiving dinner and a pint of ice cream, I might balloon up to 135 and a half for a few minutes. And if I run 8 miles hard in the middle of the summer, I might shed a pound or two of water. I'm a natural 135-pounder. So is Al. The other two, Digit and Hatcher, I mean, could be among the best in the state this season at 130 and 140. We call him Digit because he's missing one. He's got no pinky on his right hand, but I don't think it's ever made any difference to him. We always said if he couldn't make weight for a match, then he could just cut off the other one. We're outside of town now, heading for Weston, I guess. There's no traffic, so Al takes it over to the other lane and puts on a proper British accent. "Bloody good driving, if I do say so," he says, holding his arms straight out on the wheel like a chauffeur or something. He swings back over into the American lane and turns up the radio. It doesn't take long to get away from town, and then it's 20 minutes, mostly through the woods, until you get into Weston. Our town is small, about 4,000 people, plus all the farms on the outskirts, but it's the county seat, so we've got the courthouse and the jail and an abnormally high concentration of lawyers. Most of the guys who work at Sturbridge Building Products, making cinder blocks, precast concrete steps, stuff like that. That's where my father works, and Al's father, and Digit's. Hatcher's old man is a doctor, but he's president of the Wrestling Boosters Association. They've got about 400 members. I'm not kidding. Part of me wishes we'd gone to the game so I could look for this junior that I sit near in geometry. She's cute and doesn't have a boyfriend or anything, and I'm pretty sure she doesn't mind that I'm a wrestler. I mentioned her to Hatcher the other day, and he sort of frowned and said, "What are you interested in her for?" I had no answer at the time. There's about three levels of girls at the school, some who are almost groupies about the wrestlers, not very many of them and they're mostly annoying. Some who are anti-wrestling, because I have to admit, the whole town is a little warped about this sport. And the ones in the middle who judge us for what we're worth. If you wonder why I'm taking geometry as a senior, it's because it took me 3 years to get through 2 years of algebra. And to use an algebra expression I don't use very many, the missing factor in the girl thing I stated above is that there are a whole lot of girls who probably don't even give a half a thought about whether somebody wrestles or not. I have to keep that in mind. There seems to be an important announcement on the radio. I catch the word for dictator, I think, and then the guy clearly says Honduras. Hatcher yawns and stretches in the front seat and says he's getting tired. Al punches one of the things you punch to change the station in a hurry, and we get top 40 music out of Scranton. Donut, says Al, looking around and nodding. Digit says the same thing, and I nod too. Mr. Donut is about our best road trip. There's a donut place in town, but we like to ride to Weston, and Mr. Donut gives us a valid reason to go. I've puked donuts out the window twice on the way back. Donuts and Rolling Rock. My limit ought to be 3 beers, but I can't stop at an odd number. Us four have our differences, but mostly we see eye to eye. We all want the same thing. Two guys from Sturbridge have won state titles over the years. Jerry Franken won at 135, my weight, about 20 years and 70 pounds ago. Now he's a supervisor at the plant and treasurer of the Booster Club. Peter Valdez managed to dry out to 103 as a senior 6 years ago. He went undefeated. We were in sixth grade that year, and we were just getting into wrestling. That's when the four of us hooked up, became a unit. We'd go wild at the matches. Peter pinned just about everybody he faced. We wanted to be just like him. Peter got a full ride to Pitt and made All-America as a freshman, then screwed up his knee and quit school. My dad says Peter should get promoted to supervisor any day now. Al almost hit a deer right around here last time we went to Weston. It raced out onto the road and then froze in the headlights. If we'd been on the right side of the road, we would have nailed it, but it got out of the way just in time. It was a buck. Looked like a 4-point, but we didn't get a good look. Scared us. This area is overrun with deer. Except when I go hunting, then the deer disappear. My dad gets a deer just about every season. I've been hunting with a bow for 4 years and haven't even taken a shot. You're not patient enough, Benny, he says. We come over the hill and can see Weston lit up in the valley. It's big enough to be considered the city around here. There's a real downtown with exotic things like movie theaters and three-story buildings. In Sturbridge, we've got a McDonald's and an Arthur Treacher's, a strip mall with an Acme and anemic Kmart, and about 7 shoe stores and several video places. People drive over to Weston to keep from going insane with boredom. Weston has 2 high schools, North and South. They're both in our conference, and they beat up on us pretty good in most sports, but not wrestling. Wearing a Sturbridge wrestling jacket carries some weight over here, although we don't go looking for fights. Hatcher's the only one of us who usually wears his Letterman's jacket anyway. Al parks at Mr. Donut, which is pretty much empty. There's 2 girls at the counter who might be from the college. It's called Western Area Community College, but they don't look very receptive, and like I said, we're not looking for distractions. We got our stuff quietly and head across the parking lot to the Burger King. One of Al's best tricks is to get a milkshake and fill his mouth with it and then go out into the parking lot and make believe he's puking it up. You can ruin a lot of people's meals that way. Tonight we're quiet, though. Pensive, I think the word is. Tomorrow we hit the mats. Al is picking at his hair with one of those big tooth combs as we start back. He got a cut this afternoon, or shorn, because his hair is kind of like a sheep's, really curly. He looks evil with the same kind of tight hair on his chin and above his lip. That's the only place he can grow it. And a mocking kind of smile. But he's okay. His father is one of the few people ever to get fired from the plant because he drinks more than anybody else and controls it even less. They rehired him last winter. Al was 11-0 at the time. I don't know what else to say. Practice starts in about 10 hours. I'll be spending the year getting pushed into the mat by Al in workouts and watching the meets from the sidelines. If I cut weight or add it, I run into Hatcher and Digit. I just look out the window all the way back to Sturbridge and hardly say a word. The needle's on empty when we get back to town, but Al drives right past the mobile station, which stays open until midnight. The girl is standing on the island with her back to the road, looking at her nails, I think. I figure she weighs about 106. She's somebody I could probably write a song about. The worst things about Sturbridge. There's nothing to do, there's no way out, and there's no end in sight. The best... the wrestling team, the cinder blocks, and you can smell cows from my bedroom when the ground thaws in spring. My father sits awake most nights until 1 or 2, not really waiting up for me, just waiting, I guess. Go to the game, he asks as I walk into the living room. He leans forward in his armchair, the tan one that almost matches the sofa they bought when they got married. He's drinking a pint can of Schaefer, but he's not drunk. Nah, I say, we just hung out, too keyed up. Well, tomorrow's the day, he says, knowing what I mean. He looks back at the TV, cheers in syndication. This is your year, Benny. It isn't, but I nod and kind of suck in my lips. What he doesn't know is that Hatcher isn't at 145 anymore, and Al didn't bulk up to 140 like we planned, so instead of a block of the four of us from 130 to 145, it's only 3, with me as the odd man out. Mom asleep, I ask? Yep. My father works hard. You can see it in his face. He's lean like me, but his eyes are tired. He ought to wash his hair more often. He just seems to have shrunk into his body, sort of, like there was an extra layer of muscle under the skin that melted away, and now the skin's a little too loose. He never wrestled, played baseball at Sturbridge 25 years ago, and still plays softball in a summer league and goes bowling once a week. Does a job once in a while at night on the sly. He leans back in his chair and looks at me with something like pride, expecting, I guess, that he'll soon have a reason to be proud of me. He doesn't pressure me, ever, but I've seen the way he looks when I win, trying to contain his smile and not yelling much, even if it isn't a varsity match. I know it'd make him the proudest guy in town if I was winning regularly. Like lots of others in this town, my father envisions us as this solid, unbeatable block, 4 straight weight classes worth 4 pins in nearly every match, the kind of nucleus that wins championships. The fact that we've been friends for so long makes it much sweeter, at least in theory. Suddenly, there's not as much room in that theory. Suddenly, I'm not really sure who I've been friends with. Can you be best friends with a group? You have to realize that I've been wrestling against Al since junior high school, and I haven't beaten him in 3 years. If he wasn't such a borderline student, he could go anywhere he wants to next year. Then there's Hatcher up at 140. A year ago, I could probably take him, even giving away a lot of weight. But a year ago, he was just a little better than average, third in the district at 145. He's dropped weight since then, went to 2 camps last summer at Trenton and Penn State, wrestled in all-comers tournaments, and improved 200%. And if I could dry out to 130, I'd just get weak at that weight. Digit would kick my butt, too. I sigh out of frustration, but turn it into a yawn. I'm not giving up on myself, and I'll never quit trying. But if you look at this with any objectivity at all, then you know I've just got about nowhere to go this season. See you tomorrow, Dad, I say, and head up the stairs. My father yawns and pulls 1 foot up on the chair with him and blinks a couple of times and says, go get him. Those are the same words I heard him whisper last month when I went after the minister. Some things I won't eat. Sushi, lamb, cheese, bologna. Some things that I will. Rice, oranges, chicken, pretzels. I've got 10 minutes. We've been at it for more than an hour, and there's at least that much to go, and you can bet this is the only break he's going to give us. So far, it's been okay. We've been going one-on-one for about 20 minutes, and of course, I'm matched with Al. He's only pinned me twice, but he's been in control most of the way. My shoulder's all right. It only hurts when Al's got leverage, and I'm trying to stay off my back. He knows it hurts, and he's got every right to exploit that. He hasn't pinned me because of the pain, just because he's stronger. There's a frantic kind of energy because we know how good we can be this year. We're solid at every weight class except heavyweight, and there's competition 2 or 3 deep for every spot except Al's and Digit's and Hatcher's. Maybe Al will have some competition. Hatcher's over by the window getting some air, and he sees me leaning over by the water fountain. Getting your butt kicked, he wants to know, and I shrug and say, yeah, but not entirely. He comes over and I get another drink. He asks me how I'm doing, how many times I got pinned, and if I managed to score any points. I tell him, but I'm staring at the wall and getting my head together while I'm talking, thinking about maybe cutting weight. There are about 8 freshmen sprawled on the floor, about 10 feet away from us in the hall. Coach goes extra tough on freshmen, especially in the first couple of weeks, so you can't stay with his program unless you really, really want to. Get up, girls, Hatcher says to them, and they all get up in a pretty big hurry because you don't screw around with a wrestling star in this town. You just don't. Hatcher gets one of them in a headlock, a little kid with big ears and kind of a bowl haircut. What's your name, he asks. Tom Austin, the kid says, smiling like he's thinking maybe Hatcher's just being friendly. No, it's not. Not this season, Hatcher says. It's Susan. He lets the kid go. There's a fat kid standing there looking dumb and scared in a purple T-shirt, and Hatcher grabs him and starts twisting. The kid jerks back, but Hatcher holds tight and laughs. When he lets go, the kid looks around at the other freshman, mostly just embarrassed. You'll be Claudia, Hatcher says. Hatcher heads back for the gym, and I start to follow. I turn to Tommy Austin, who I know from church, and because our mothers are friends. He gives me a raised eyebrows look because he's a tough enough kid and senses that this is part of the game. Hatcher was Eleanor for the first month of the season when we were freshmen, I tell him. The fat kid says, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to make it. I tell him, I was princess. The kid smiles a little. We get back to the gym and the coach splits me and Al up so we can work with younger guys. We're working on takedowns and I've got Claudia in my group. He's soft like he's never wrestled before, so it's like wrestling one of those blow-up punching bags with a bozo face or something. Then we do leg lifts and very slow push-ups and other painful exercises for about a half hour and then hit the showers. A lot of guys look just about dead. I reach into my locker and wipe my face on a T-shirt, breathing hard. Al is 6 feet away, telling some of the new guys that you have to hate your opponent. You have to crush him or he'll do the same to you. You never let up, he says, and he's right. But he's looking hard at me, and I don't feel like looking back. I take a bottle of shampoo from the shelf in my locker and pick up my towel and head for the shower. There's a wall of steam coming from the shower area, and about 27 guys are crammed in there under the 10 shower heads. Hatcher's facing the shower in the corner, so I can't see him, and he can't see me. Hatcher's almost square, so he's muscular, and the almost crew cut exaggerates his marine look. Al isn't so much muscular as angular, with just the right balance and flexibility. Hatcher's got his eyes closed, so I reach over and turn off the hot water and turn up the cold. He jumps and laughs and yells at me, and then he grabs a freshman and holds him under the cold water. I duck under another shower and get my hair wet, and Hatcher gets bored with the freshman and walks out of the locker room. I get back to my locker, and Coach is sitting there on the bench talking to Al. He turns to me and points, but keeps talking to Al. This is the reason nobody will beat you this year, he says. Benny's the best workout partner you could get. I give him a tight smile, and he swings his legs over the bench so they're on my side. He's about 35 and paunchy. He wrestled down at East Stroudsburg State and works out with the upperweight guys now. He leans in like he's about to confide something to me, taking his lower lip between his teeth and squinting some. You'll get your matches, he says. Alan Hatch will need some work against heavier guys, so they'll shift up a weight sometime, and you'll handle 135. Let him wrestle JV, says Al, who's been listening the whole time, drying his frizzy hair with a towel. Seniors on other teams do it all the time. No way, he says. No seniors go JV in this school. You know that. I wouldn't want to, I say. I was 16-0 in JV last winter and won a holiday tournament, but I'm not looking for consolation this year. I look at Al, then at Coach, and then I turn my head to my locker. They're wrong if they think I'm going to accept being a backup. I want to be a state champion just as much as Al does. There's a party tonight, mostly because of the end of the football season, but any excuse for a party will do around here. I think I'm up for it. We'll all get dried and dressed and pile into Al's car, me and Hatcher and Digit and Al. I keep telling myself that I've won 42 high school matches and lost only 5. Even though it's mostly been JV, and you never know who might get hurt. The coach has me listed second on the depth chart at 135 and 140, and if I really dry out, I still might have a shot at Digit down at 130. Something has to give. I'm not going to watch these guys have all the fun. Places I want to go. Iceland, because it's isolated. New Orleans during Mardi Gras. Penn State on a wrestling scholarship. Kim's house. Places I don't. Staten Island, because it's in New York. Australia, because it's so far away from everything. Prison and the Middle East. Al is one of the school's biggest drinkers, but he's sitting at the kitchen table tonight with a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi in front of him. The other guys at the table are mostly football players, and they're sucking down beers like we would do if it wasn't wrestling season. Parties like this one are tense if you're not drinking. I can't talk to girls much unless I get my tongue loosened first. Kim is here, the one from geometry, but she's in a corner with some other girls laughing and drinking wine coolers. We got here 20 minutes ago, and Al has said something about his not drinking at least four times. Then he confides in whoever's closest that there's a pint of vodka mixed in with a Pepsi, and we're all just so stunned we can hardly stand it. Digit's got a new pair of pants on, and he's wearing shoes, which is unusual for him. Leather shoes, I mean, like for church or something. He almost always wears sneakers. He's decided to be mature all of a sudden, got his hair cut short and acts polite. He's sitting next to me on a kitchen counter chewing gum. There's not a whole lot of room in this house. This is where one of the cheerleaders lives. Her parents are out of town at a funeral. And anybody who's cool, borderline cool, or knows anybody that's cool is here. That's just about every senior and junior and some sophomores. A couple of extremely good-looking freshman girls are along. That's about the whole guest list. If the party follows the usual script, then a handful of last year's seniors will show up later on, drunk and still wearing their Letterman's jackets, and there'll be one or two arguments and a couple of punches. I could be involved, but usually I'm not. Kim comes into the kitchen, squeezing through the crowd, and I look sideways at Digit. He's sitting with his hands on his knees, looking around. Since he got his hair cut, it's lighter, almost red, and his ears stick out. He doesn't say much, but he's deep. Every once in a while, he shows evidence of that. Not lately, though. Kim has on a dark sweater and black jeans. She's got a healthy tone to her skin, which looks good with dark hair. 5'3", weighs about 100, no excess. She's looking for another wine cooler, which could be in my favor. She hasn't seen me yet. She's got a thin silver chain around her neck, which I like, and she shows an athleticism that could be useful. She runs cross-country and track, which is good for the legs. Digit nudges me, and I stare at Al over at the table. I can only catch part of what Al is saying because the music's sort of loud, but he's talking to Richie Foster, who's a junior and looks like he'll be our man at 189, and pointing to the Pepsi bottle. Richie heads into the living room, and Al turns to right tackle Ernie Corso and tells him again that the Pepsi isn't just Pepsi. Everyone laughs real hard. "Hi, Ben," Kim standing in front of me, very friendly looking. "Hi, Digit," she says, too. She hands me a bottle and asks me to open it, and that seems like an excuse to come over, but I'm not complaining. It doesn't open as easy as it ought to, but I get the cap off. "How's it going?" she says. "Great," I answer, and I nod my head to reinforce what I said. "You like this song?" she says, pointing to the CD player. I hadn't really thought about it, but I figure she must like it since she asked. "Yeah," I say, "I like it." "I listen to these guys a lot," she says. "They get me psyched before I run." She looks out into the living room where a few people are dancing. She looks back at me and just rotates her shoulders slightly. I have most of their tapes. I can think of absolutely nothing to say, so I just nod with my mouth hanging open. She looks back into the living room, then takes the bottle from me and says, "Well, thanks," with a smile. She punches Digit playfully on the knee and then heads back for the corner where her friends are. I look at my hand, which has a little ring of cuts on it in the shape of the wine cooler cap. Digit smirks and grins at me and says, "Smooth." Like I said, he's deep. He can say an awful lot in a word or two, like, "Nice going, jerk. She's standing there looking great and giving you an obvious opening with that lame 'open this bottle, please, you big strong man' thing. And you just nod your head like a goof and let her get away." He said all that and more with just a look and a single word from the 50s. Smooth. I often wish I could be that eloquent. We drink sometimes, me and Digit, but not to lose ourselves. It's great in the early fall on a really crisp evening to get a bottle of some beer in the woods and up past the house or in the cemetery. When the four of us get drunk together, we might act like jerks, but if Hatcher isn't around, when it's just me, Al, and Digit, we can get down to some serious stuff. One night, maybe 2 weeks ago, we sat under the stars till really late talking about getting out of here next summer, maybe going out west. Al said he'd like to work in the rodeo. He's never been on a horse, I don't think. But you say things like that when you're really back. No, you can get away with it. If Hatcher had heard that, he'd never let Al forget it. He'd be calling him Tex or something. But I get it, and so does Digit. Even if it's not really about the rodeo or working on a fishing boat or going to Wyoming, it's about getting out, breaking the pattern. You can't talk about things like that at a kitchen table with everybody in school here trying to be cool. I hopped off the counter and squeezed through the crowd to the refrigerator. I get a can of 7-Up for me and one for Digit. He doesn't really want one, but I have this thing about balance, and if he drinks one, too, it'll be even. I come back over to the counter and sit down again. Well, that took about 2 minutes, maybe less. "Seen Hatcher?" I ask. Digit says he thinks Hatcher's upstairs already with Marcy, a cheerleader who just broke up with Andy Larson, the quarterback. Hatcher and Andy are pretty good friends, though, and so they shouldn't cause much trouble. Plus, Hatcher could kick Andy's butt if it came to that. I can see through the doorway into the living room where Kim is, and I notice that Marcy is there, too. Marcy's out in the living room, I say to Digit. He says, oh, Andy's at the table with Al. Al's already getting kind of loud. Me or Digit will have to drive his car home, which is something we do a lot. About an hour later, I finally get around to talking to Kim out of the back porch. I saw her slip out there, probably for some air, because a lot of people are smoking in here. So I get down from the counter and tell Digit, I'll be right back. How's it going? I think I asked her that before, but it's been an hour and things might have changed. Great, she says, which is pretty much how it was last time. Want a sip of this, she asks, holding up a bottle. Nah, we don't drink in season. Oh, she says and smiles. She chugs down the rest of the bottle and shows me the label. It's non-alcoholic cranberry sparkler. There's a tiny pink drop of it on her lip. She sets the bottle on the railing and flicks back her hair, which is medium long and sometimes gets in her eyes. There's no light on the porch, but there's quite a bit of light from the kitchen, so we're not standing in the dark, and it's stopped raining. How's wrestling going, she asks. Well, this is the first day, I say. For once, I don't want to talk about wrestling. So it's hard to say. Things look good. How's things with you? You been running? 5 a day, she says. I'm going easy right now, getting my head back together. I'll step up my mileage soon. I don't know a whole lot about cross-country. I know she won the league meet, but bombed in the States. You ready for that test, she asks. Not yet. I definitely don't want to talk about geometry. What do I want to talk about? Al saves me from worrying about that for long. He comes out and puts his arm around Kim from behind. He barely knows her, but I guess he figures that anything of mine is also his by association. She turns and gives him a kind of puzzled look, but she's not annoyed or anything. Hi, Al, she says. He keeps his arm on her around her shoulder and says to her that I'm the key man in his life right now. You gotta push me, he says to me. If I'm gonna win the state, I gotta work my butt off every day. Kim slowly twists out of his grip and Al puts his hands on my shoulders. He's drunk, but his sudden urge coming over him. Nobody's gonna touch me this season, he says, with his teeth clenched, smiling at me. You gotta make me work, Benny. You gotta make me work. Then he's got a hand on my thigh and he's taking me down right there in the muddy backyard. And before I know it, I'm on my back and he's got me cradled and I can't do anything about it. Guys, stop, Kim says. Come on. But Al's got me pinned down and there's mud all over my back. He backs off and I get up on my knees and then he's on me again, shouting, two, two. That's how many points you get for a takedown. Al, cut it out, I say, with my cheek pressed into the dirt and my arm twisted behind my back. That's my bad shoulder. He gets up and pulls me to my feet, and I shove him away. You got to work my butt off, Benny, he says. You got to get me that championship. He goes back into the house. There's about 6 guys on the porch watching. Kim is shaking her head. What's wrong with him, she says when I come over. He's got problems, I guess. I wipe the back of my head with my hand, then wipe the mud from my hand onto my jacket. I got to go home and change. Are you going to come back? I think I hear some hope in her voice. I don't know, maybe not. But I go home and take a shower and change and do another 100 sit-ups, and since it's still pretty early, my father says I can use the car if I'm not drinking. Get some gas while you're at it, he says from his chair, handing me a 10. So I pull out of the driveway and debate whether to go back to the party or just drive around by myself. There's about a quarter tank of gas in the wagon, so I can get away with 30 or 40 miles, I figure. It's downhill from my house to the party, which is on the other end of town. You can walk from one side of Sturbridge to the other in 10 minutes and drive it in 2. There's 2 traffic lights, one on either end of Main Street, up where it crosses the Pocono River, and down at our end up Monroe Street from the plant. We live 2 blocks up the other side of Monroe, which puts us just about out of town. Sturbridge is very compact, tightly spaced houses with narrow driveways, small yards, thick trees overhead, and then the land spreads out quickly when the houses end. There's a dairy farm about 200 yards up the road from our house, and the road turns to dirt another quarter mile along. When I hunt, I just go out the back door, cross my neighbor's yard, and walk a couple 100 yards to the woods. I pull up to the party, and Kim and Digit and, surprisingly, Marcy are sitting on the front steps waiting for me, I think. They come over and get in, and Marcy's wearing Digit's red Baron's cap. They get in the back, and Kim gets in next to me. Get the mud out of your hair, Digit says. I smirk back at him and show him that my hair is still wet from the shower, and I say, what a jerk, meaning Al, but I say it in a way that doesn't have any bitterness, I think. He was wasted, Digit says. When he came back in, he stood on the kitchen table and told everyone he just won the Olympic gold medal and started singing the Star-Spangled Banner. I put the radio on. We only have AM in this car, and the only station that comes in clear is Country Western. I'm surprised at Digit sitting so close to Marcy, who only cheers during football season because she plays forward on the basketball team. She's good-looking and athletic, and she's on that plane a little above me and Digit in the most popular fringe. Hatcher and Al have started crossing into that fringe at times, but me and Digit have always been a notch below. Kim's not sitting close to me at all, which is okay since I haven't earned it yet. I miss anything, I ask? Darla broke up with Eddie, Kim says, with not much enthusiasm. Ernie won a chugging contest, she looks at me and kind of rolls her eyes. I can only take so much of that nonsense. We've already covered the whole length of Main Street, and I stop at the light where it dead ends into Route 6 above the plant. The usual routine here is to make a left and loop back around the block, heading up Main Street in the opposite direction. You follow the same general pattern when you reach the other end of Main, and in this fashion you can be sure to keep up with all the major developments outside the Turkey Hill Market and the Rite Aid drugstore, which are the only places in town open past dinner time. The McDonald's, Kmart, and a few other places are out on 6, about a half mile away from the business district. Those establishments are not so essential that they need to be included in every loop. Every fifth or sixth time is sufficient. Rite Aid closes at 10, Turkey Hill at 1. The Sturbridge National Bank keeps its digital clock on all night. Right now it's 10:51 and 42 degrees. Although we rarely talk about it, just about every kid in town has a pretty good awareness of time and temperature because of that clock. You could argue that those awarenesses contribute in some way to our wrestling success, but you'd probably lose that argument. Kim is twisting her hair around her finger and looking out the window, and I think Digit is actually trying to make out with Marcy. I don't regularly talk much, but it seems I ought to be forcing along a conversation with Kim. I want to ask her to run 6 miles a day instead of 5, or 6 one day and 4 the next. And I want to ask her what's going on with Digit and Marcy, because I sure as heck never saw that coming, but I'll have to wait. So we don't say a whole lot as I slowly drive 4 regular loops and 2 extended ones. I read the signs out on Route 6 for the 1,000th time. Just listed, 3 bedrooms on Lake, $69,900, Sturbridge Greenhouse, live bait, night crawlers, always fresh. Friday, Saturday special, roast chicken, mashed potatoes, $5.99, Dodge trucks, Agway, Mike's Video, Buy American, Save Jobs. The radio's going, and there's a lot of younger kids downtown, freshmen and sophomores mostly, hanging out in front of stores wishing they had something to do. The biggest group is in front of the movie theater, which shut down about 6 years ago and has been vacant ever since. The cops will chase them away any minute now. There's a place called the Fun Zone out at the strip mall next to Kmart with pinball and video games, but it's not cool to hang out there if you're over 12. They do have a couple of pool tables, though. Nobody wants anything at McDonald's. We go past the party house again, and Digit says, "You better let us out. I'll get Al and drive him home." Digit and Marcy get out, and I'm left with Kim. After a minute, she asks, "Why is Alan so important to you guys?" "I don't know," I shrug. We watch out for each other. "I really don't know why. Maybe it's because he's got potential the rest of us don't quite have, and we can't bear to see it wasted," I say. I start chewing on my lip, not really sure about this. Why should I care about Al? If he wastes his chance, it just opens the door for me. Kim looks confused, too. "If he can't control himself, why should you guys even try?" "I don't know. It's sort of nobody else is looking out for him. It's just Al and his father at home, and his father is kind of lost. I think Al spends time looking out for him instead of the other way around. And he's not so out of control, really. He's as dedicated as the rest of us." "Didn't look that way tonight," she says, but she seems amused rather than critical. "We've been wrestling together since sixth grade, so we know where we stand with each other," I say. "We all work hard, we all want to be the best we can, but Al's got talents the rest of us can only think about. Great balance, unbelievable flexibility, and this ability to anticipate what the other guy's going to do." Kim thinks about this a second, then gives a half smile. "I've seen you wrestle, Ben," she says. "Don't sell yourself short." It's 11:38 when we get back to Main Street. I had figured 11:36, and it's dropped a degree to 41. Kim waves to a guy who's standing under the clock with a bunch of his friends, guys who graduated 2 years ago. "My neighbor," she says to me. "Jess, you know him." "A little," I answer. "Not much." "He's smart. I don't know why he's still hanging around Sturbridge." "This is where he lives," I say. "He lives there. He's 20. "I guess. I'm not sure what she's getting at. He shouldn't live here because he's 20. I mean, I want to get out too, but it's not so easy." "So where do you expect to be," I say, "when you're 20? "Villanova, I hope, or Stanford." "Oh, I think she really means it. It makes sense. More sense than the rodeo. We don't say anything for a few more blocks. Then Kim yawns and says she'd better get home, and I do still have to get gasoline. She lives over past the hospital, and I'm not exactly sure where, but I turn toward the river in that direction. It's the third one on the right, she says, when we get to Ridge Street, and I pull up there, and she does a surprising thing. She slides up close to me and kisses me on the cheek, and I can't see how I deserve that. That's for being such a nice guy, she says, and she looks at me like she wants to say something else, and finally she does. Loosen up, okay? She says goodnight and gets out of the car, and I'm not sure if she means I should loosen up with her or with Al or what. I'll have to think about it. I watch her walk away, and I kind of shudder. She seems to have me pretty well figured out, even if I haven't got a clue myself. There's a Texaco at the corner by the light, but I think I can get it cheaper out on 6, so I head down Main Street one last time and drive out beyond the plant and the Kmart and McDonald's. She's there, wearing a heavy gray sweatshirt with the hood pulled up, and there's only one other car at the pumps. But she's at that car, and it'll look pretty odd if I pull up behind her and wait. There's a fuzzy older guy standing on the open side, and I know he'll be filling my car if I pull over there. I consider driving up the road a mile or so and coming back when she's free, but I've already turned into the station, so I just say the heck with it and go to the other side. I roll down the window and tell the guy to give me 10 regular, and at least I have a good look at the girl. The other car is already pulling away, and if I'd been 30 seconds later, I could be over there now talking to her. She doesn't look my way, standing there counting bills. She steps over to the back of my car to talk to the older guy who runs the place, and I can see her from mid-thigh up to neck level in my side-view mirror. Miraculously, the phone starts ringing inside the station, and the guy rushes over to get it. "He's getting 10," he yells to the girl, which means she'll be completing the transaction. I get a surge of adrenaline, like when they call you onto the mat for a match. She takes the pump out and hangs it up and screws the gas cap back in place. "Okay," she says with a really sweet smile, and I hand her the 10. I can smell gasoline on her hands. She takes the bills out of her pocket and folds the 10 around the wad. "How's business tonight?" I say, surprising even myself. She tilts her head and brushes some stray hair back into her hood. "Regular," she says. "Cold," I say. "Not too bad," she says. "We're out of here in 10 minutes. "Yeah," I say, and I start the engine. "Night," she says, and turns to a guy in a pickup truck who's pulled up into the other side, and I wave to her. I turn back onto 6 and turn up the volume on the radio, but I keep the window open and lean my elbow out. "Whoo," I say pretty loud, feeling really good all of a sudden, feeling pumped up, thinking about Al. Flexibility is one thing, balance is another, and strength and instinct are essential, but desire is something you can't place a value on. Desire can overcome all those other things, can turn a sheep into a tiger. "Loosen up," I tell myself. Want it more than he does. I'm going to kick his butt on Monday, and I'm going to come back and talk to this girl again. My best matches. The one final of the East Pocono JV tournament by a pin. My freshman year, I pinned a guy from Wharton in 18 seconds, and last year lost a wrestle-off to Al 9-4. My worst matches. Got pinned in the first period versus Laurelton last year. Puked on the mat for winning a match 2 years ago, and lost my first ever varsity match 13-3. Not sure. Church League soccer game last month. Hit that pompous, hypocritical jerk with a couple of good ones before they dragged us apart. Thought I'd be going to jail. Sunday afternoons, my father's mother comes over for dinner and to watch Pocono Polka at 6. She doesn't have cable at her house. By 6, my father's ready for cheese and beer, and the three of them sit in the living room to watch people from up the valley dance to the best polka bands around. I usually stand at the edge of the room trying to prod myself to leave, but staring at the set, mesmerized, as if witnessing a horrible accident. Puffy women in Lackawanna polka dot jackets dancing with their sisters and stiff old guys in polyester bowling shirts with big guts. They televised this, I swear. Probably the last time my parents danced was when my aunt got married 10 years ago. A commercial comes on, and I go out in the kitchen. The oven stuffer chicken is still sitting in the corner on the counter, and I bend down to get a sheet of foil to cover it. My grandmother comes in and yanks a hunk off the bird and shoves it in her mouth. "Best part about a chicken is snitching some later," she says. "Yeah, Grandma, and it's real appetizing for the rest of us when you get your fingers in there, too." "Good strong sermon this morning," she says to me with a tight smile. The sermon seemed to be about vulgarity and obscenity and adultery and hanging out on Main Street at night. The key thing you have to know about this town is that it disapproves. You don't have to know much else. Just remember that the higher powers, cops, council, parents, clergy, they disapprove. My grandmother knows this and supports it. He's a forgiving God, she reminds me, tearing another bit off the chicken and dipping it into the congealed grease at the bottom of the pan. Grandma's a great hinter. She just knows I'm up to the most vile, perverse activities any neighborhood kid ever dreamed up, and she's waiting for me to see the light. To her, I think, God is this force perched just above the town of Sturbridge, watching with a heavy hand, ready to strike us down if we sneak a beer by the river or touch a willing girlfriend below the neck. Somehow he gets his word across through the pale Reverend Fletcher, who grips my hand with a giant smile every Sunday as if everything's forgotten, and says he hopes I'll be at the youth group meeting that night. I won't be. Grandma heads back to the living room, and I cover the chicken with the foil and shove it into the refrigerator. Al's already dressed for practice when I get to the gym Monday, sitting on the bench by our lockers. He wants to see us, he says, pointing to the coach's office. So we go in and sit down, and Coach has what I'd call his understanding frown on, like he's disappointed in us about something, but he's ready to talk man to man. I heard you guys had a fight. He's looking at me. I shake my head kind of slowly. No. He looks at Al. Al lowers his chin and raises his eyebrows. No. Were you guys drinking Saturday night? Just Pepsi, Al says. Coach looks at me again. No way, I say. We're all quiet for about 20 seconds. There was no fight. That's not how I heard it. I wouldn't fight this guy, Al says. No way. We just worked some on takedowns. We were psyched up. Coach says, mm-hmm. He looks at me, and I say that's all it was. Al, you can go, he says. Al shuts the door, and Coach still has that look on, a little more intense, maybe. I know this is tough on you, Benny, he says. What is? I'm the one who told Hatcher to cut to 140, he says. I made Al stay at 135. It's real nice that they wanted to make room for you, but this isn't about being buddies. He picks up a pen from the desk and starts clicking it on and off, keeping his eyes right on mine. The both of those guys could win state titles this year. You know how incredible that would be. They need every advantage they can get, and they're staying at those weight classes. I know. I don't get this lecture at all. I know you don't like it, he says, but I better not hear about you taking any cheap shots at Al. Now I get it. He's got to be kidding. I never took a cheap shot at anybody. That's not how I heard it. That's his favorite phrase. He heard wrong, but I can't say that to him. I just stare at him until he tells me to get ready for practice. I'm numb for the rest of the day. My grandmother comes over again on Wednesdays, but she doesn't stay long. She and my mother, sometimes my father, go to the weekly covered dish supper at the church. 18 different varieties of macaroni and cheese. And as an added bonus, the Reverend Fletcher offers a delightful and informative talk on how evil and sinful we all are, just in case the message didn't get through on Sunday. I walk into the kitchen as they're getting ready to go. My mom is looking for her oven mitt to get the casserole out, and I catch Grandma saying, "He sure is a patient God." Just about anything my mother or anybody else might have said could have triggered that response. "Won't you join us, Benny?" Mom said. "I don't think so," I say. "The movie's at 8. I think I'll shave. I'm taking Kim to the movies over in Wheaton, or in Weston. I asked her yesterday afternoon before practice, and she didn't hesitate or anything." "You're going to a movie on a school night?" Grandma asks, as if it's any of her business. "It's a date, Grandma," I say. I turn to my mother. "Dad going?" "He hasn't come in yet," she says, "so I doubt it. They're very busy at work for some reason." "Let me get you some of this," she says, as she lifts the stuff out of the oven. "Nah, I'm going to stop at McDonald's with Kim." "Kim what?" Grandma wants to know. "Chavez," I say, very clearly, knowing it will spoil her week. "Sounds Catholic," she says, matter-of-factly. "Sounds even worse than that, doesn't it?" Grandma doesn't mind the few black people in the area, but if you're Catholic and or Puerto Rican, you'd better keep out of her way. I guess she figures that as long as her God is patient and wise and forgiving, she doesn't have to be. "Watch it, Ben," Mom says, and she isn't much more tolerant of Grandma than I am. Mom's tough. She's a nurse part-time at the hospital, and she stays in shape with jogging and cycling and stuff. She used to work at Hatcher's dad's office, but she walked out on him last summer. I never did figure out why. "I'll drive you down," I say. "It's only a few blocks, but she's got the dinner to carry, and it's pretty cold out." I back out of the driveway, and Dad's walking up the hill, so I stop for a minute. Mom rolls down her window, and he comes over and kisses her. "We'll be back about 8, she says. "There's food in the oven." I'm just dropping them off, I say to him. I'll be right back. When I get back, he's at the kitchen table in his undershirt with a beer and the plate from the oven. He's picking at his teeth with his index finger. What's with you, he says. I shrug. Got a date tonight. He nods approvingly. Somebody I know? I don't know, Kim Chavez. She's a junior. Oh, how'd practice go? Not bad. It wasn't. I'm getting there. I am. I'm not sure where I'm getting to, but I'm holding my own, even with Al at times. You guys are busy, huh? Yeah, some big deal went through. He takes a swig of the beer, finishing it. He needs to shave a heck of a lot more than I do, even though it's been only 12 hours. Last time I shaved was Saturday. Where are you going? Movies. I open the refrigerator and get a glass of milk and hand him another bottle of Schaefer. He was out last night doing one of his jobs, I think. We got a scrimmage on Saturday, I say. I know, I'll be there. McDonald's is crowded, and we get on the line nearest the door. There's a skinny old lady in a violet kerchief and a big, heavy coat standing to the side looking flustered. Speak up, Harold, she says to a guy, her husband, who's at the counter trying to get somebody's attention, needing ketchup or something else they forgot. He just stands there, she says to me, shaking her head. He stands there, and they ignore him. Speak up, Harold. Kim meets my eyes with a smile. She's got on a white and pink striped button-down shirt with designer jeans and running shoes. The silver chain's there, too. We're third on line, and I catch Chrissy Lane's eye behind the counter and wave two fingers. I motion toward Harold with my head, and Chrissy looks over at him attentively. She smiles and reaches under the counter for McNugget sauce, and he thanks her and moves away. We get our food and head for a booth. A little kid in a purple YMCA soccer T-shirt comes racing around the corner, and I had to juggle the tray to keep from dumping it. Kim grabs my arm, and she feels pretty strong for such a little thing. Some guys from the basketball team are at one of the booths, and I nod in greeting and sit with my back to them. She eats a lot, so we don't talk too much during dinner. You know that guy in the Syracuse sweatshirt, I ask, referring to one of the guys at the basketball table? Yeah. I heard his brother deals coke. Yeah, I've heard that, she says. People jump to conclusions. It's not true. No? She shakes her head. Some of his friends. Danny's okay. Kim's only lived here about 2 years, but she knows more about certain aspects of the town than I do. She knows who's getting what from who and who's into drugs and anorexia and things like that. I offer her a French fry because she's already finished hers, and she takes it. I tell her what the coach said on Monday, and she frowns and clicks her tongue. That's really unfair, she says. I had a teacher like that in seventh grade. She couldn't stand me and made my life miserable. She gave me C's and B's until my parents went to the principal about it. Yeah, well, I don't think Coach is down on me, particularly. He's just protecting Al. He hasn't coached the state champ yet, and I think he thinks I'm a threat to that. Sounds real mature. She's smiling when she says this. She seems to have some understanding of this behavior we males go through. Most girls seem to be repelled by it. Kim just seems amused. I guess Coach is about as grown up as you guys are, she says. He'll probably jump you in the backyard, too. We both laugh at this, but I think it's got some truth to it. So are you, she asks, what? A threat to Al? I don't know. I don't. I ought to be, but I'm not really sure. He's the best in the state, she asks. Yeah, he could probably win at any weight from 130 to 140. Can you beat him? I think about this for half a minute. Then I answer, yes, I have to. She folds her arms. Why? It's what I am. Which is? A wrestler from Sturbridge. I'm a kid from Sturbridge. That's why you have to beat Al? I don't know. I think so. I'm a kid from Sturbridge, she says. Her voice is gentle but firm. I want to win a state title, too. I plan to, but for me. Yeah, I bite down on my lip. I haven't talked this much to a girl in my life. I don't mean nothing bad by this, but you're not really from here, like I am. I know, she says, but you don't have a chain around your leg, either. I like it here, Ben, but this is a pretty small pond. She brings her fist down gently on my hand, then grabs her purse and gets up to go to the bathroom. I turn as inconspicuously as I can to watch her walk away, and I see that the basketball players are watching her too. One of them, Damon Henderson, the point guard, gives me a sly smile. He waits a few seconds to make sure she's out of earshot, then he points toward the bathroom door and gives me a raised fist salute. I laugh, a little embarrassed, but glad to have been seen with her. She takes my arm on the way out, and I can smell her toothpaste. I'm feeling pretty good about things. I go around and open the car door for her and then pull out to Route 6. We're turning left, but I look the other way to check traffic, and of course I can see the mobile station up there. I'm torn for just a second, maybe even guiltily, but I don't even know that girl's name. Kim slides toward me just a little to turn on the radio, but then she stays there after it comes on. I think I'm falling in love, but I'm not sure with who. Maybe just with the idea of it all. And I think we'll stop right there. We made it about almost halfway through the book. And that'll give you a little bit of an idea how much further we have to go. So the story of four young guys on the wrestling team and getting ready for wrestling season. This is called Wrestling Stourbridge. And we'll pick this story up again tomorrow night with more on Reading with Rick. And we'll have another couple of stories for you as well. So that's it for tonight. Have a good night and take care and sleep well. And we'll talk to you tomorrow when we return with another episode of Reading with Rick. Good night, everybody.